Holding coming out, being watched very closely by Theodore. They give the puck back now to Josi, cutting in. He scores! Roman Josi scores! And the Predators now are 18 games into an unbeaten streak. Oh my! 5-4 the final.
The Predators never lose anymore, ladies and gentlemen. That's right. That was the call last night in overtime. Roman Josi with the game winner. Stillman and Company, 102.5, 106.3, the game, streaming live on Twitter, Twitch, YouTube, and Facebook Live, live in the Spring Hill Heating and Cooling Studios. Ian's here today. Hello, Ian.
What up, what up?
How about that game last night?
That was a good one.
How about it? I've been thinking all day. In my entire Predators fandom, which I'm not going to lie to you, I went to games the first year and, you know, I sprinkled here and there, but I really consider myself a Predators fan starting in 2011. You know, that year where they, you know, got good. And I've been going all the way back trying to think of a game that I can remember where I just felt so good about the team, the game, the moment, everything else that was like last night's game. And I'm having a hard time doing it. There was a game, I remember, I was actually looking it up before we jumped on the air. There was a game in 2012, I think, where Anders Lindback was playing goal, I believe against the Dallas Stars. And I remember that game of being one of those big kind of games where the team just showed so much grit. They killed off a 5-on-3 at the end of the game. And it just felt like, you know, that Predators team had some juice in them. And they ended up losing in the second round because Mike Smith caught on fire. But that was a good hockey team. That wasn't as good as this team. But that was a good team. Last night was an all-timer, folks. As far as regular season games are concerned, I thought last night was one of the most exciting, one of the most shocking, one of the most exhilarating come-from-behind victories I've ever seen, if not the most exciting, shocking, and exhilarating victory in come-from-behind fashion I've ever seen in the regular season from the Predators. They started off sluggish last night. They kind of started off like I was last night. You know, when we get done with the show at 6 o'clock and I stay for the game, you know, I usually spend that hour in between 6 and 7 kind of just, you know, just socializing and chatting and high-fiving and, you know, all the whatever. But, I mean, I'm pretty tired after the show's over and I got an hour of socializing and I'm a little sluggish. And last night, Vegas came out the gates flying up and down the ice. You know, I talk about the Vancouver Canucks, that 2011 playoff series. That's what it looked like. I mean, they were skating circles around the Predators early on. And I was almost like, oh boy, this is not going to be pretty. You know, Lauzon returns into the lineup for the first time in a couple of weeks, and there's a turnover in their own end, and Lauzon can't get to the puck, and he loses the battle, and it sets a guy up right in front of the net, and now all of a sudden it's 2-0, and I'm like, whew, not the start they wanted. And the Predators, to their credit, even when Vegas was on the attack in the first period and the second period, the Predators did not pack it in. I mean, they had opportunities in the first period. They were attacking the net, and they hit a couple of posts, and Evangelista had a couple of them, and they just were not burying their chances. But I sat there in the crowd last night, and I was like, you know what? I can live with this. When it was 4-2 in the third period, and the shots were about even, and I know that the Predators had hit a couple of posts here, and they started off sluggish there. And Vegas, this was a huge game for them. And let's not take anything away from them because those guys are so good. Like Eichel and Hanifin, and, you know, they've always had Marchessault. And, like, those guys, Carlson, McNabb, those guys are so big, so fast. I see up close and personal why they're the defending cup champions. But at 4-2, I sat there in the seats last night, and I said, I'm going to come on the air tomorrow, and I'm going to talk about how even though they got beat and the point streak's over and everything else, I'm going to say, you know what? That wasn't the end of the world kind of game. Because even though they didn't have their A game, I thought they competed with a team that did have their A game. And then they fought back. They fought back. And if I've learned anything, if you've learned anything, if we've learned anything, it is you can never give up on this group. not this team. I can't tell you about next year's team. This is not last year's team. This is not the team before that. This is not 2018. This is not 2017. This is not 2012. This is not 2011. This is not 2006. This team, you do not give up on. And last night was an example of that team, no matter what, never giving in. And it is all about one play here, one penalty there, one decision here, one puck battle there. And this team never, ever, ever throws in the towel. I remember they lost a couple weeks ago against John Hines and what I thought was an incredibly gutsy call by a not-so-gutsy coach in John Hines. And they lost the game in overtime. And I remember how the Predators scored with the extra attacker right there before the end of regulation. And it was like, my God, this team, they never go away. This team, they never stop. This team is always... And that's what they did last night. They proved it again. Not all of these games, and I know that they've been winning on this winning streak and they've only trailed for 15 minutes until last night, but the sign of a good team is a team that does not go away. And this team has proven to all of us that you can never, ever, ever count them out, and last night was a perfect example of that. And this is the best stretch of hockey I have ever seen from the Nashville Predators. And again, that includes the 2017 Cup Final and the 2018 President's Trophy. This is the best team I've ever seen because they're getting it across all four lines offensively. Jankowski last night, Ian, my guy.
This is a nice shot.
You know, well, I'll leave it at that. But Jankowski, I mean, that's my guy right there. And I'll tell you, he put one in there, got him on the board last night, but it's all four lines. The three defensemen, so everybody's making a play every night. And then, of course, it's the Stars. And last night, you know, it was Forsberg who got the big goal to make it 4-3. And then it was Josi who ended up winning the game. And, of course, Saros was fabulous outside, I think, of the first 4 minutes of the game. And I don't even think a lot of that was his fault. This team's awesome. This team's incredible. This team is everything that we could ask for in a team. They could have easily packed it in last night at 3-0 or at 4-1 and said, you know, it was a nice point streak. It was great while it lasted. And, you know, Vegas is a good team, and they just came out tonight, and they outworked us at the beginning of the game, and we don't like it, but it's okay because we'll get on the plane, we'll go to Arizona, we'll right the wrongs. I mean, they went into the game last night with a 99.6% chance of making the playoffs, and now it's a 99.91% chance of making the playoffs. They were going to make the playoffs regardless of what happened last night. But this team doesn't do that. And this team is a perfect example of the group and the sum of the parts being better than each individual. This team doesn't have Connor McDavid on it. This team doesn't have Austin Matthews. There's no question. Outside of Josi, there's no question if you watch last night which team has more talent. Eichel and Hanifin, and this is not even close. But again, 4-2, third period, still time on the clock, and there's Jason Zucker, who was acquired for a sixth-round pick at the deadline. And there he is sacrificing his body to get that puck in front of the net. And there's Philip Forsberg once again, just like on Saturday, who just finds the right place, the right time, and pokes that puck right in the net. And all of a sudden, it's a game. And once it became a game in that building with that team, they weren't going to lose. Guys, what we're watching is special. And I've heard Bill Belichick say this all the time, and I've heard Peter Laviolette say this all the time, and I've heard all these old school coaches that have been doing it for forever, and they always talk about how every year's different. And about how fans, and I totally agree with this, fans want everything to pick up where it left off last year. There is no guarantee that the Kansas City Chiefs are going to be good next year. Do I think they're going to be good? Yeah. Is there a guarantee? No. But there is something about special teams and what, you know, riding the wave. And I heard Adam Vingan say today, all of the metrics, whether it's your traditional stats or your analytics gurus and everything, they're all saying this team is awesome. Everything this team is doing. It's not just, oh, this goalie is taking over, or, oh, Yossi's incredible, or, oh, this. And last night was a great example of that. And Barry Trotz said something a couple of weeks ago when this team was playing its way out of the funk. And he talked about how when he was trying to assess how good his team was before the trade deadline about buying and selling, he talked about how this team could not play poorly and still find a way to win. He said some teams, they can play their B game and they can still win. He said this team can't. And I agreed wholeheartedly with that opinion at that time because that's what we had seen. Well, last night, the Vegas Golden Knights, the defending cup champions, that were for the most part intact and whole outside of Mark Stone, but injuries happened in the playoffs too. The Vegas Golden Knights, the defending cup champions, with something to prove, played their A game, and they lost. You didn't play your A game. Not at the beginning. But the thing about the great teams, I'm not even talking about the good teams anymore. I'm talking about the great teams. The thing about the great teams is the great teams find a way. Over this 18-point or 18-game point streak, the Predators have lost twice. Once, because John Hines pulled the goalie in one of the craziest and gutsiest decisions I've seen. And because the Predators had a goal taken off the board that was called for a high stick. A puck hit off a stanchion and went into the net. That's the thing about this club. If you beat them, everything has to go your way. That's because you're a great team. Guys, this is a cup contender every which possible way. I couldn't go to sleep last night after the game because what I witnessed last night in person was the kind of performance that made me think this team might win the cup. Like, I'm sorry, there is nothing more I need to see that this team can do it. This is a great team. And every night they just set the bar higher and higher and higher. And again, we're talking about a 4-1 third period deficit against the defending cup champions that are trying to catch you in the standings, and you still won. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm not selling tickets for the Nashville Predators. They have tons of people that do that. They do a good job of it. But if you're a fan and you're thinking, do I want to get in on this because I don't want to be left out of the playoffs like I was in 2017 or 2018, I'm telling you, this is a team you get behind right here. This is a special team. I could talk about this for 4 hours. And I guess that's how we're going to start. 615-737-1025 is our phone number, 615-737-1025. The play of the game last night. And again, you know, hockey's all about inch here, inch there, puck bounce here, puck bounce there. But the play of the game last night, I want to get to that and, of course, your phones, and we will do that here on Stillman & Company, 615-737-1025, if you want to weigh in. Let's talk about Window Nation. That's right. Window Nation. I always tell you about, I'll tell you the truth here. If I think something's great, it's great. Window Nation's great. They came out to my home for the free in-home estimate. I'd had them check all of my windows. I said, guys, I want you to check all of my windows. I want you to tell me if I need them replaced, what kind of windows I need. I want to lower my energy costs. They went out, they inspected, they took a look at all my windows. They said, Jared, you don't need to upgrade your windows. Your windows are okay. And I thought to myself, what an honest company to sit there and have the opportunity to tell me, hey, we could replace this window and this window and this window and this window, and they didn't do it. And so that's how I know that if your energy costs are just out of control, especially how it's nice and sunny and warm one day and sunny and cold the next day and cold air's coming in, let Window Nation be the guys to take great care of your home. I promise you, they'll do a fabulous job because I know I can trust them because of my experience with them. So if your windows are cracked or leaking and they won't open or stay open, it's time to call the pros at Window Nation. Because right now, for every two windows you'll buy, you'll get two windows free. Plus, zero down, zero interest, and no payments for 24 months. With proven quality and service, it is no wonder why thousands have trusted Window Nation. Do not miss out. Call 866-90-NATION or visit windownation.com. Again, for every two windows you'll buy, you'll get two windows free. Zero down, zero interest, and no payments for 24 months. That's 866-90-NATION, windownation.com.
Send it in deep, left wing corner for Nashville. Forsberg tipped it, going in front. Patera goes down, the puck to the net. Predators are down one. That was just sticking to it.
Vegas' challenge, but the play was offside.
Oh, here we go. Are they done? Looks like they're getting off the headset, man. This is tough. And you can tell it was the two linesmen that have to, they're making the call and they're huddling up right now.
A lot of offside challenges are very quick reviews. This was not.
After review, it's determined that the play was onside. We have a good goal.
So an enormous play. It is indeed Forsberg's 40th goal of the year.
Golden Knights blocked it. Forsberg in front, off the chest of Patera. Now the shot to score! Nyquist ties it up! A power play goal!
I was pretty confident. I think from the angles I got, the views I got, I think it would be really hard to say it wasn't, or was offside. I thought it wasn't. So I think when those ones, and they take time, I think you feel that you're probably looking to make the right decision.
I don't know about that one, Coach. I don't know. So I thought that play last night, where, again, 8 minutes to go in the third period, you're down 4-2. And, again, I was sitting in my seat. I was happy with the way the Predators played last night, even if they had lost. And I'm like, 4-2, and the Predators put one in, and I'm like, oh, everybody, not so fast, my friend. I mean, they may be coming back in this one at 4-3. And then all of a sudden, I immediately saw Vegas go to challenge, and I was like, are they going to call goalie interference? Because, you know, the goalie was on his back. And I'm like, are they going to call goalie interference? I thought Zucker got, you know, kind of pushed into the net, and I didn't. And then all of a sudden they said offside, and I thought, oh, crap. Because nobody challenges offside anymore unless it's pretty obvious because of the penalty. And so the fact that Vegas immediately was like, offside, I thought, oh, God. And so they didn't show any of the replays in the building. They just sang let it be. And I'm texting Robbie, who's up in the press box where they've got the TVs like high above so they can see everything. And I'm like, is it a goal or not? And Robbie said he did not think that that goal was going to stand. And so I was just awaiting this inevitable doom. It was about 3 minutes long of waiting for them to come back on the review. And I knew right then and there that that was the game. I knew that if they said the goal stood with the Predators going on the power play, they were going to score and the roof was going to fly off the building. And it did. I also knew that if they took the goal off the board, that at 4-2 with 8 minutes to go, having taken a goal off the board, that's probably the game. And so I'm sitting here just waiting like, okay, here's the game. So I have a couple of thoughts here. First, though, I want to play kind of the analysis, just because I find this to be funny. I want to play you the difference in the analysis between the Predators broadcast and between the Vegas broadcast. So here's Willie and Chris on the offside review on the Predators broadcast.
Vegas is challenged, but the play was offside.
Oh, okay.
Now that's even more troublesome, because I didn't think that was interference, Mace. No, I was hoping that that was going to be the case, but...
Willie
offside,
knows.
Offside, you always worry.
Yep. And that was, it didn't take long, so we'll see. There's Zucker right there. We're going to see where that puck is. Okay. That's. Oh, this is tough. Yeah, it looks like. Looks like he's going to get in. It's hard to see with the frames. That's tough to tell with the.
Have the frame by frame. To slow it down a little bit more.
But looks like it.
Well, these days, when you challenge offside, you're pretty sure. You don't see a missed offside challenge very often. And
We'll have to have a better look than that if we're going to make an assessment up here.
It looks like it, from where they were to that frame, the frame where you saw the puck and Zucker over the line, it looked like he could be offside. So, oh, man.
It's very, very close.
It is so close. We just saw
I think your best hope here, Mace, is that it is inconclusive. That is the only hope. Because it's very close. Okay,
right here, let's
this
see. This
give
is
you
the
a
look.
Better look. This is very close.
Still, it looks. But is it? Is it as? That is tough.
I mean, that
it looks like his back. Look at the back of the blade. It's off the ice there, but is it over?
It looks like it's. It looks like it's going to be offside.
Your feet,
but you're not sure.
I think it's the legs.
They both go across.
But look at the plane, his jersey. I don't know if it's the legs or the skates have to be onside, but his butt and his jersey are over the line there. Man, that is close.
So you hear right there, like, oh, God, oh, my goodness. Oh. Not sure about that. Now, here was the Vegas call of the Vegas analysis of the offside.
Vegas is challenged that the play was offside.
So not crashing the net, offside.
That's what I was wondering. Dave Bragowski is so good at catching that video coach. Couldn't get the puck out. And here's a look. That's tough to tell, that one. I don't know if on the far side of the ice if it was...
It was Zucker that was ahead of the play with Josi carrying it in. You think about how close Shane the other night, the game against Seattle.
That one right there looks like it's offside, right there. They've got to catch the frame, but they are so close. And this is another close one. The puck has to completely... Ooh. Well, that looks like offside right there, that frame. That is, see, take it back right there. Stop, I know it's hard.
It's like you need like a quarter frame.
You do, but there is, if you stop at the right spot, I think the other angle will show that one might have too. There's the look right there where it's offside. This is the one up top, that right there. The puck is not over there, and then he is ahead of the play, but you can tell by the amount of time they're taking looking at this, the linesman, that how close it really is.
By the way, when one broadcast says, Mace, I think we have to hope that it's inconclusive, and the other broadcast is like, I think it's offside, chances are it's probably offside. So I have some thoughts on this. Number one, I think it was probably offside. But what I do not like is I do not like in replay, like, did 1 millimeter of that skate cross over that blue line, you know, before that 1 millimeter of that puck? That's not what replay's for. Replay is for a couple of weeks ago when the Buffalo Sabres were in town and Cody Glass got sent to the box for high sticking, and they replayed it and saw that it was the Buffalo guy that high sticked the other Buffalo guy in the face. That's what replay is for. Replay is for when a guy doesn't catch the ball and it hits the turf that we say incomplete as opposed to the guy caught it. It's not for that stuff. And so, I mean, that drives me crazy. My first thought, though, is it was probably offside, but it was so bang-bang, I'm not upset about the call going the Predators' way. My second thought is, what a terrible challenge last night by Bruce Cassidy. I mean, you have got to understand the game if you're Cassidy. And I know Cassidy's got, you know, his video coach is the guy who's saying, coach, challenge the call. But, I mean, Cassidy, at this point, you are now putting the game in the hands of the replay official. Like, that's what you're doing, is you are now putting the win or the loss in the hands of Toronto. Because if they take that goal off the board, you're going to win. And if they end up keeping it there, you get charged with the delay of game. And I knew the Predators were going to score on that power play. Like, I knew they were going to score. And then I think the other thing is that I think we all have to realize that these are the kind of decisions that are the difference between you getting bounced in the second round and you winning the cup. Like that's the line between winning the Stanley Cup and losing game 5 of a second round series that all of a sudden just burns you. A penalty call, you know, was it 1 millimeter of skate and one Because let's not forget about what happened in game one of that 2017 Cup final when P.K. Subban scored, and it was one – and I've seen that replay 5,000 times of game one in the Cup final, and I'm still not convinced that you could tell Forsberg was offside. But that last night, that was the game last night. And last night, you give the Predators an inch, and they'll take a mile. We'll get to your phones next. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. Stillman & Company. The Predators, apparently, they just don't lose anymore. Tomorrow, it'll be your chance to participate in Preds Pick to Click. If you correctly guess a Preds player that scores a goal in the Preds game tomorrow night, you will win a pair of tickets to an upcoming Preds home game. Participate with Robbie and Retro tomorrow morning at 8:45 a.m. Pick to Click is brought to you by TJ Anderson Homes of Benchmark Realty. List your home with TJ Anderson to get your home seen, heard, and sold.
There's a lot of belief. There's a lot of confidence in this room. I think, like I said before, there's a lot of trust in our game. We trust ourselves that we can play a really good game, and we're not going to have it every night. But I think we showed especially the last couple of games, and there was times when we maybe didn't have it as much, but we found a way to get it back, and that was the same thing tonight. And I think that's a sign of a really good team.
That is the sign of a really good team. I mean, when the Predators came back against Minnesota and tied the game with the extra attacker, I said, that's what good teams do. When I sat in my seats last night, and I'm going to say this, I thought the Predators were getting back in the game at 3-1 when Jankowski scored, and then I thought they got screwed by the refs on the fourth goal for Vegas, because I thought Lauzon got held.
Holding
and
the stick,
I thought that should have been a penalty. He was right in front of me, and I saw Lauzon. Oh, my God, you should have seen his anger.
He
with
was
the
mad.
Official. Oh, my goodness. And so, again, that's what great teams do. Roman Josi's not wrong. And there should be a lot of belief because they beat everybody. They beat good teams. They beat bad teams. It's like Ian and I were talking during the break about the Colorado game on Saturday. Colorado has not lost since, I believe it was March 2nd. They came in here.
I believe that is correct. Yeah.
And they haven't lost since then. They got rid of Ryan Johansson, and they have not lost since then. And Ian said, you know, they're beating playoff teams and they're crushing bad teams. I said, well, you know who else is beating playoff teams and crushing bad teams? You. Let's go to your phones as promised, which are driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Texture says, after last night's game, I will never give up on the Predators again, the texture says. I am a season ticket holder, and I thought last night, well, they're a good team, and I guess we're just going to have to lose this game. What did they do? They came back and win. Again, that's what great teams do. Like, that's what I know, because we around here have had our hearts broken so many times that it's almost like we're afraid to expect what the great teams do. Right now, this stretch of hockey is the best, just the way that this team is playing, like, every night, and that they're not reliant on the goaltender like they were in the 2017 Cup run, or they're not top-heavy with a bunch of guys that are just kind of along for the ride like in 2018. This team is freaking awesome. This is the best I've ever seen them. I'm serious. Texture says, I love the Predators, love the energy, and love what they're doing. But as a Pittsburgh transplant living in Nashville, I'll always be a Penguins fan first, Preds second. Forsberg was offside in game one of the 17 Cup Series. Ian, do you believe that Forsberg was offside in game one of the 17 Cup Series?
We never saw a conclusive angle on that, but, I mean, if they called him offside, I believe they probably saw some.
I thought it was bullcrap. Now, I'll say this. I love the fact that now you get penalized for that. And I think that's why they put the rule in for – I think that that game one of the Cup final is why they put that rule in, because it's not enough of a detriment to lose the timeout. And so instead of, like, you better be sure when you're challenging – they would not have challenged that. Sullivan does not challenge that in game one of the Cup final if they're down 1-0 and then it puts them on the penalty kill. You're not going to do that. And so I thought last night, that's why I thought it was such a dumb decision by Bruce Cassidy to challenge. And I think Cassidy's a good coach, but that's why I thought it was so dumb.
Well, that's why when Willie said that in the broadcast, you usually don't see teams lose an offside challenge because
right.
They are almost, you know, 100% sure it's offside before they throw that challenge flag
well,
on
think
that.
About it in football. How often do you see a team lose an incomplete pass? You know, a completed pass, incomplete pass on a challenge. You know, every now and then a team will run up to the line of scrimmage and they'll be on defense and the coach will throw the flag. But, like, as far as, you know, where we get a good look at it, you can pretty much tell if the ball was caught or not. And I think it's the same with offside. So, like, normally when Cassidy's told, hey, challenge, Cassidy probably thinks it's a slam dunk. But you can't have that. Reese from Greenbrier says, I saw Vegas fans all over Twitter complaining about the offside call being the reason the Predators won, which is simply not the case. You cannot blow a three-goal lead twice and turn the puck over in overtime. Complain about the refs, and Lauzon was so clearly held on Vegas' fourth goal. Here's the thing, guys. The refs are a part of the game. Like, again, these are playoff battles. Like, last night's game felt like a playoff game. The way Vegas came out skating, and, I mean, the energy they had, these are playoff games, and in the playoffs, you can lose based off of something like that. Again, like the Cup Final in 17 with Forsberg in the offside call, which I think is still bullcrap, and I still don't understand how they came up with some idea that he was, and I'll never forget about it. Bruins fan texts in and says, Preds fans better be ready for us obnoxious Boston fans. Love seeing the Preds kick tush. Look forward to next Tuesday. I will be there on Tuesday, and that'll be another one of those measuring stick games because Boston looks every bit like a cup contender. You know what's crazy about Vegas? I thought last night the way that I saw Vegas skating up and down the ice, I mean, they were flying. And the way I saw them skating up and down the ice reminded me of Boston last year. Now, some of that might be because the coach came from Boston, but I mean, those guys are so fast. It is unbelievable how fast they were last night. One texter says that the game took a turn when Greg Sankey was shown on the Jumbotron. Ian, did you see that?
No.
So last night, I'm sitting in the seats at the game.
I saw Jeff Fisher was there. But
so they showed Jeff Fisher on the Jumbotron and the fans clapped. I was not one of them, but the fans clapped when they showed Jeff Fisher. So later in the game, you know, probably when it was 4-1 maybe was when they did it during a timeout. They showed Greg Sankey on the Jumbotron, and the fans booed. And I think this probably has to do with his NCAA tournament comments. You know, Greg Sankey recently came out and basically said, well, we should get more SEC teams in and kick out the Cinderellas. And everyone's like, no, you got enough teams in the tournament. And so they showed Sankey, and they booed. And Sean Henry was sitting next to Sankey, and you could see when they booed, like, Sean Henry was like, oh, no, you're fine. You know, like, oh, you know, it's you know, they show Sankey on the board. Sankey kind of puts his hand up in the air, and then it's like, boo! And Sankey's like, oh, great. You know, you could tell. It was kind of like when I got booed on the Jumbotron. You know?
Seems a bit harsh.
Comes with the territory, you know?
Oh, just a correction. Colorado lost last night to Montreal. So that
Montreal.
Was, so that 2-1. So that was Colorado's first loss was last night since the Preds beat them in early March.
Think about this: Montreal is one of the crappiest teams in the league, and they've beaten both you and Colorado.
So it's trap games. Yep.
I mean, goodness gracious. Texter says at the game last night, Preds fans next to us left after the Golden Knights went up 4-1. But honestly, I didn't see many others leaving, which was amazing to see. You can tell the fans now believe that they have a chance. Let me say this. The Stillman group last night, we did have the conversation, Ian.
Yeah.
We had the conversation of, around the start of the third period, it was like, hey,
what
if we want to go, like, no one's going to be upset if we leave. Like, it's going to be okay. Like,
good thing you guys decided to stay.
We did stay. Neely says, why did the Preds line up for the referee after the game last night? It was right in front of me. I'm guessing the referee was retiring.
Yes, he is. The line, it was a linesman. Lines
Do we know
person.
Who it is? One of our famous guys like Wes McCauley? Or...
No, he is a ref. Wes McCauley is a ref. This was a lines person. I don't know his name.
I know Wes McCauley, and then there's a Kevin O. something. Kevin O. Sullivan, Kevin O. Sampson, Kevin O. something. I don't know. Wes McCauley's the only referee I know. He refs every game. All right, Chris Sanders to join us next. 615-737-1025 is our phone number here on the program. You know, we get this whole rebuild talk and everything else. We'll be joined by Chris. We'll get his thoughts on the Titans, Stillman and Company, 1025, 1063 The Game. So I'm making it official. I am unsubscribing to notifications from Adam Schefter, Ian Rappaport, and Tom Pelissero.
It's about time.
Well, I set myself to the notifications on those guys when free agency started, and that's what led to our massive five-minute meltdown and then excitement roller coaster with Mason Rudolph and Calvin Ridley signing, because I get the notification pops up on my iPad. But I've got about 15 notifications in the last segment about Jadeveon Clowney signing with the Panthers. Who gives a rat's ass about Clowney or the Panthers? They're a perfect fit. He'll go to a team that throws money away like there's no tomorrow, and I just can't get notifications about it because I don't care. Chris Sanders joins us now in the program, former Titans receiver. So, Chris, I want to start with this with you, which is this.
Sure.
The Titans, for the most part, free agency is over. They could still add a guy here, add a guy there, and it's not that those moves are not consequential because they are, but again, you know, kind of the real money is gone. And right now it's about the draft. But the Titans, in my opinion, have too many holes when it comes to the draft when they've only got two picks in the top 100. So between left tackle, right tackle, inside backer, Denico Autry's replacement with 11.5 sacks, safety, etc., how worried are you that the Titans are not going to fill those holes?
I mean, they're not going to fill all the holes, but I still think, you know, everybody's talking about Will Levis needs to play well this year, but for him to play well, you still got to have an offensive line. I know they got Christian Berry at the center position, but we've been talking about this the last 3 or 4 years that they got to get a left tackle, and I think that you have to go a left tackle. And some of the guys at left tackle we've been talking about the whole time, was it Joe Alt, you know, from Notre Dame? You got Mims from Georgia, you got Latham from Alabama. So, you know, even though they got a whole bunch of holes that they need to fill, they definitely need to fill this hole because you got to protect your quarterback.
Chris, you've done this before. You know the business of the NFL. So, L'Jarius Sneed, they agreed to a trade Friday night, and now it's Wednesday, and there still has not been an official announcement, and you know as well as I do what the holdup on something like that usually is, right?
Yeah, it is. I don't know if he passed the physical. I'm not saying
bingo.
That.
So my question to you is, what's your level of concern on the knees?
I mean, don't when they say it happened, it should actually happen the next day and sign and get it out the way. So if there's a holdup, there's something that's holding it up. So, you know, if it's an injury or something that they saw, I just hope that it doesn't come out that it gets reneged. But at the end of the day, if there's a holdup, there's something wrong, maybe with the physical or something wrong with the contract.
So what I think's happening here, it was reported yesterday, a $20 million signing bonus. Ooh. I think what's happening is I think the Titans – and Sneed are negotiating the language of years 2 and 3. You know, it's a 4-year deal, but with $55 million guaranteed, it's pretty much a 3-year deal with a fourth option. And I think what's happening is with the $20 million signing bonus, the Titans are probably telling Sneed, you're going to get paid up front, but we want protections for year 2 and 3. And that's probably the language of that is getting worked out. But that takes me back to the knees themselves. How much of a concern is it for you that clearly the league was skeptical of Sneed's knees, given the draft pick that he went up with, and the fact that the Titans have not officially made this deal official yet?
I mean, that's a scary situation. And I think that's a great observation of what you're saying, because it makes you think that if we're going to give you all this money, I think, was it 50 or 55 million guaranteed? I mean, when you're investing in a player like that, when you're investing, you got to make sure he's available, because you can make all this money and not be available, and then it can be a waste. So, you know, I don't know if it's a contract. I don't know if it's because of his knees, but at the end of the day, you better make sure that everything is worked out with the contract, but also physically that he can be on the field, Jared.
Former Titans receiver Chris Sanders is our guest. So there was a mock draft yesterday at ESPN that came out, which had the Titans taking J.C. Latham at 7 over Marvin Harrison Jr. What I want to know, as a receiver, are the Titans, because of the lack of both tackle positions, are the Titans forced to where they could not, with Ridley in the picture, where they could not take Marvin Harrison if he's there at 4?
But if he was there and they didn't get Calvin Ridley, absolutely you got to get him. But at the end of the day, I think that with them signing Calvin Ridley, it makes the decision even easier, because now you got your top-notch receiver. I'm not saying how it wasn't a great wide receiver. He still is. But at the end of the day, you got to have some protection. We can talk about having the skilled players all day. You can have Jerry Rice on one side, Randy Moss on the outside, on the other side. But if you don't protect your quarterback, he's going to continuously get hit in the face. And if you look at last year, what was the Achilles heels of the Tennessee Titans? It was the offensive line. They gave up 60 sacks last year. So you got to make sure that you get somebody that protects Will Levis.
Okay, so you're telling me that you would pass on Marvin Harrison Jr. if he was available at 7 and Joe Alt was off the board?
Yes, and the reason why I say yes on that situation is because they got Calvin Ridley. Now, if they didn't get Calvin Ridley, then now my thinking changes up a little more to where, you know what, I can get an offensive line later on in the draft. You just can't pass on a Marvin Harrison if he's sitting there. You know, but I think the decision is easier is because you got Calvin Ridley that's just as good as Marvin Harrison or even better.
He's not as good as Marvin Harrison, is he?
He's better. Right now he's better than Marvin Harrison.
But I'm talking about, like, what he's going to be.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know Harrison's going to be the dude. But at the end of the day, I just think that with them getting Calvin Ridley, it makes the decision a little easier.
How concerned are you that the Titans have not replaced Danico Autry's consistency and production?
I mean, you are concerned because when you talk about a guy that comes in there and does his job, I mean, he does it, you know, great each and every weekend. And when you talk about a guy being consistent from game one to game 17, that's what they're going to miss. If you look at how many sacks he had, he made 12 sacks last year. And the thing about this is not just 12 sacks. He was an impact player. So I think the Tennessee Titans need to figure out somebody to come in there to take his place, because at the end of the day, you know, when you have an impact player and you lose him, you better bring somebody in there to make sure he comes in to make plays.
So, by the way, TD just texted me and said, no, with a bunch of exclamation points, you don't pass on Marvin Harrison Jr.
No, absolutely not.
You just said you would.
No. I said it will be easier if they get, because they got Calvin Ridley. That's what I'm saying. Now, if they didn't have Calvin Ridley, then that's a no-brainer. I go with Marvin Harrison because he's a generational player. I mean, he's the guy. But why would you get Calvin Ridley and Marvin Harrison on the same team when you don't have a left tackle? That's kind of what I'm saying. I'm not saying you don't just pass on them. And TD is absolutely right. You don't pass on that guy. But the reason why I say you pass on him now is because you got Calvin Ridley on the other side. That's all I'm saying.
What were you going to say, Ian? Oh, never mind. So, I do have a thought for you, Chris Sanders, sure, which is this. Do you think the Titans are in a rebuild right now, or do you think they're going for it with the moves that they have made, you know, with Snead and Awuzie and Ridley and Cushenberry?
No, they are going for it. I mean, everybody's talking about it's a rebuild situation and you lost a lot of players. But look at the guys that they got. Tony Pollard, a great running back. You got Snead, Awuzie. You got, you know, Cushenberry. You got Kenneth Murray. You got all these guys that you brought in, that guys that can play. Because when you're a rebuilding year, you just said, okay, we're just going to throw this year away. That's not how Rand Carthon and this organization is looking at it. Because the thing about it is, when you have a situation that you had last year where it was a bad season overall, you're 5-12 and all that, it ain't no rebuilding season, because the fans want to win now. And look at the players that they got. The players that they got are showing the fans that we got to win now. This is not a rebuilding situation.
How early in the process, now that we know that Ridley's going to be a part of this, now that it seems like it's going to be Ridley, Burks, Hopkins, Phillips, Okonkwo, Spears, Pollard, Wiley, those guys. They may add a receiver in the draft, but we have a pretty good – Nick Westbrook, Akine. We have a pretty good idea.
Sure.
When should Will Levis get this group together and start working out with them?
Like, absolutely now. I mean, even if you don't do a lot of stuff on the field. I mean, because you got to remember, it's a long, grueling season. You don't want to run routes each and every day. But I just think on the mental side, being on the same page mentally, looking at film and just kind of getting, you know, guys adjusted and getting to know each other. Because the thing about it is, you can have a great room of wide receivers, you can have a great room of quarterbacks, but if they're not in sync, if they're not in camaraderie, then it's not going to work. So the thing that I would do is just maybe call those guys up and maybe have a walkthrough, maybe throw some routes a little bit, but just mentally all been on the same page. Talk about defenses. Talk about, you know, beating a defensive back off the spot and where am I throwing the ball in a spot. So when you have situations like that where they're mentally good, then all of a sudden they get on the field, they're all on the same page.
What if I were to say to you, well, they've been texting each other?
What? I mean, you can text each other. You can text a lot of things. It's like this. You know, I married my wife. You know, Faith, she's beautiful. But if I just text her all day and didn't spend time with her, she's not going to like me. That's kind of like the same situation with this. If I'm just texting you, that's great, which is it's great communication. But I got to see you physically. I got to physically see you walk through a route. I got to physically see you run a route so I can know what you like and where I know you need to put the ball. We can text all day, and that's great. But at the end of the day, if you're on the same page, you got to do it texting-wise, film-wise, and on the film-wise. And I think that if they can do that, it can work.
Chris Sanders, as always, on our program. Chris, great stuff.
Appreciate you, brother. Love you, man.
Love you, too. Not surprised you shout out. Of course, I'm not surprised at all Chris found a way to shout out and flex on his beautiful wife. That is something that you know Chris Sanders loves to do. Coming up next, there is something I am incredibly skeptical about. I mean, incredibly. And you should be, too. We'll do that next. Stillman & Company, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Tune into 102.5 and 106.3 The Game this week for NCAA tournament coverage brought to you by Toyota. Ready, set, go get your Toyota today at Toyota.com.